ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Der Ried vom Srimad Bhagavad Gita, 6, Chapter, Text 39. Etan me samishayam Krishna chetum arhasi asheshata tvat anya samsaya samshayasyasya cetā na hi upapadyate etane samshayam krishna etame samshayam krishna Chetam arhasi asheshataha Chetam arhasi asheshataha Tvatanya samshayasyasya Tvatanya samshayasyasya Chetanahi upapadyate Chaitanahi upapadyate Etame samshayam krishna Chaitam arhasi asheshata Tvatanya samshayasyasya Chaitanahi upapadyate Mataji. This is me, my samshayam doubt Krishna, O Krishna, chetum to dispel arhasi, you are requested asheshata completely tvat, then you anya. Other samshayasya of the doubt asya this cheta remover na never he certainly upapadyate is to be found. Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely, but for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. Purport. Krishna is the perfect knower of past, present and future. In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord said that all living entities existed individually in the past, They exist now in the present, and they continue to retain individual identity in the future, even after liberation from the material entanglement. So he has already cleared up the question of the future of the individual living entity. Now Arjuna wants to know of the future of the unsuccessful transcendentalist. No one is equal to or above Krishna, and certainly the so-called great sages and philosophers who are at the mercy of material nature cannot equal him. Therefore, the verdict of Krishna is the final and complete answer to all doubts, because he knows past, present and future perfectly. But no one knows him. Krishna and Krishna conscious devotees alone can know what is what.
Omakyatimranyasya kananchana salakyam Chakshurun militam yena tasma shri grave namaha Sri Chaitanya manobhistam stapitamena bhutale Svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svabhatantikam Mukham karoti vachalam pamukum langayati girim Yat kripatam mahamvande shri gurum dinataranam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srimad Prabhupada Gita Gijaya
Etan me samshayam Krishna Chetum arhasi asheshata Tvat anya samshayasyasya Cheta hi upapatyate. So this doubt, now Arjuna bringing up a doubt, a question. He was perplexed because previously, last verses, as we heard, Arjuna, when he heard the description of how to control mind by the yoga practice described by Krishna here in 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, so it's a dhyana yoga practice of absorption of the mind in the transcendence by pranayama, breathing exercise, and ultimately controlling the mind with the help of intelligence, fixing him on the absolute, on the supreme Brahman. So Arjuna had a doubt already there. Oh, this is very difficult for me because I'm Kshatriya, I'm a warrior. We are here on the battlefield, we are not in a yoga studio. We are not in a Himalaya mountain, in a cave. We are here in Kurukshetra battlefield, facing millions of enemies who are all very greedy and angry and happy to kill me. And all warriors on my side. So now, Krishna, you're recommending to me this kind of yoga, or of focusing mind on the Lord, on the Supreme Lord. This is very difficult for me because I'm not yogi as described by you. And therefore, for me, it seems to be that to control mind is more difficult than to control the wind. So then Krishna replied on that. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha in text 35. Yes, O mighty armed son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. If you take have a good sadhana, a good practice of spiritual practice, you can learn how to focus mind, to control mind. So the practice has to be clear, the goal has to be clear. If the practice and the goal is clear, and one has a good teacher like Krishna, then when a person is able to focus the mind on Krishna without deviation. It takes time, step by step. So it is not done from one day to another, but by regulated practice with tolerance and determination, what a yogi or what also a devotee has to be. Because if we are not determined, if we are not fixed, it will be very difficult to reach a goal. Even materially, it will be very difficult. So Krishna continues, for one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But whose mind is controlled and who strives by appropriate means is assured of success. This is my opinion. Krishna's opinion is a proper opinion. It's not my opinion, your opinion, my opinion. And so we're exchanging our different opinions of thoughts, you know. So when Krishna says this is opinion, he knows what he speaks about. And he doesn't want to enforce Arjuna because he's his friend, he's very dear to him. So the Lord doesn't enforce, so therefore he says, according to my opinion, this has to, if you follow this rule and process properly, although it's a very difficult work, you will succeed. Because that's the mercy of a yoga process who is bona fide. He has the power to help us to control the mind, to fix and to ultimately attain the supreme destination of the yoga, whatever he is focusing on. So then Arjuna said, "Oh Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly mindedness and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism?" So he had a doubt. He had, what happened if somebody deviates? Although in the beginning he had some preliminary faith, accepting a guru and a certain process of practice yoga or a sadhana, but then later on, due to some weakness or some attempt from maybe from past impressions from his life or previous life or from this life, some attempts, some allurements, some weakness, anatta, but still is maybe hanging deep in himself, then maybe he will give sooner or later this process, he will give it up, the process. So what will happen with such a person? Because he gave up everything. He gave up his job, his karma, his work, his obligations to the family, to his wife, to his children, to the grandchildren maybe, to the demigods, to the forefathers. He doesn't perform pinda anymore every year. He's not doing shraddha. He's not doing his sandhya every morning and every evening by sunrise and sunset, his oblations or sacrifices. He's not worshipping the demigods anymore. He's not fulfilling his duty to the society, feeding the needy, doing his work in the society according to his varna. So he gave it up. So what will be his destiny? He renounced everything for the yoga practice. He didn't take anything with him, because a yogi doesn't take anything with him. He leaves everything behind. When Narad Muni, as a small boy, he got the blessings of the Bhaktivedantas. Remember this story, Mukhara, from the first canto. Narad Muni, a small boy in previous life, son of a Shudrani, of a maidservant. And he had a good fortune to meet Bhaktivedantas, some self-realized sages. And by their association, he followed, he also assisted them, serving them, and accepted some of their remnants by their permission. You heard about the katha, and what they spoke amongst each other. Then what happened is they stayed there for 4 months in the rainy season, because sages or sannyasis, they don't travel in the rainy season. They stay in one place. Like when Lord Chaitanya traveled in South India, he came to Sriranga in the rainy season. So he stayed in the house of Venkatabhatta, who was the father of Gopalbhatta Goswami. Gopal. So Lord Chaitanya stayed for 4 months there, giving association to Venkatabhatta and to his whole family. And they all became Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Previously they were attracted more to worship Ranganath. They belonged to Sri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya, worshipping Ranganath. But due to association of Lord Chaitanya, they accepted Gaudiya Vaishnavism, worshipping Lord Krishna. So sannyasis stay for 4 months. Normally they don't stay a long time in a householder's house. But in rainy season they stay longer in one place. So the boy had the good fortune to associate and serve the great Vaishnavas. But then after 4 months they left. They gave him last instruction on how to go on with the sadhana, what he has seen. And they encouraged him to practice this process. And he was a young boy, 5-6 years old. So it was easy for him to grasp all this, what he saw and perceived, and applied it in his whole life, own life. Then by destiny, his mother became bitten by a snake. So she died. And he had no father, he had no family. So he gave up everything. He thought, what is the use to stay at home? Has no more home, no mother, no wife, because he was anyway too young. So there was no wife, no mother, no obligations anymore. So he thought, there's no use to stay at home in this situation. Because if you don't have a loving wife in your home, or a mother, then that is not a home, and that place you should leave. Don't stay. You go. Because there's no affection. So the boy Emilia accepted this as the Lord's causeless mercy to him, to go the path of detachment, of vairagya, renunciation. We cannot become renounced as long as we are attached to something very strongly. We cannot give it up, even if we want. Even if our intelligence understands, it's not good. to be attached to certain things in what keeps us away from devotional service or from pure bhakti. But still, we cannot give it up. But in Bhagavatam states that a devotee who is very dear to the Lord due to his devotion and to his engagement and surrender unto him, even for a short time, the Lord mercifully takes away all his attachments and gives him shelter at his lotus feet. Yasyaham anugrinami harishyatattanam shanai. Very famous verse, Prabhupada quoted it many times. Yasyaham anugrinami harishyatattanam shanai. This verse was spoken to Yudhisthira Maharaj. So Yudhisthira Maharaj had to go through so many tribulations with his family, Kunti Devi, Draupadi, five brothers together, Pandavas. So they had to go through so many troubles. So sometimes I ask, why devotees had to go through so many troubles? Why they got through so many challenges? And the answer is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto to somebody who is very dear to the Lord. If the Lord sees there is some little some attachment what keeps the devotee still in the material world, Krishna is taking away. Hari. Harishyatattanam shanai. Because Krishna is Hari. He can give, he can take. Like Prabhupada told my father, always told me, Krishna has 10 hands, 10 arms, 10 hands. So if he wants to give you with the 10 hands, how much you can take? If he wants to take away with the 10 hands, how much you can keep back? Therefore, Krishna is very merciful to his devotees. Those who are even slightly show some interest, some devotion to him, Krishna never forgets. We may forget. Maybe we go through tribulations. Maybe we go through so many allurements, attempts. And we forget because we are conditioned. Although we are also eternals. Living entity is eternal. Nitya nityanam, chetanas chetananam, ekubahonam, yovitadati kamam. So there are two eternals. One is Supreme Lord. He's omniscient, he's vibhu. He knows everything, past, present and future. He never forgets. Because he lives eternally in the present, he's like the sun who can perceive everything what is going on in the world. For the sun, there's no sunrise and sunset. Sun is always there. Only for us conditioned soul is sunrise and sunset. But the sun has no sunrise and sunset because the sun is always a param, is aloof of the earthly sphere, because it's much, much greater, much more powerful than the little earth. So, therefore the Lord is always in transcendental position. He's always aware what is going on in all the times because he lives in the eternal presence, in the eternal existence. Therefore, he's always aware what is going on. This I explained yesterday. This is the nature of the internal energy. The Lord has the internal energy of Ladini, Samvit, and Sandini. So the Sandini is the eternal awareness of existence. So the Lord is always aware what is going on. And he is Samvit. He knows everything, past, present, and future. Mataksmitya jnanam apovanam cha vedaisya sarvaya aham eva vedya aham sarvas. The Lord is in everyone's heart. From him comes the remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. The Lord is never covered. He's never in ignorance. But we living entities, we are covered by the darkness because we are not the sun. We are not Krishna Surya. So Krishna is always Vibhu. We are Anu. We are very insignificant, very, very tiny, very small. Part and parcel of Krishna. Also eternals. But we forget our nature of eternity. And our real eternal position as servant of Krishna. That's transcendental knowledge. Somebody who is fixed in transcendental knowledge, he always understands, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. He doesn't forget it for one moment. But the conditioned soul may be due to bad habits, sometimes forgets. It's in his weak time or weak moment. And deviates, and that maybe drags him sometimes away in a different direction. And especially in the yoga practice, this is very big downfall, because the yoga practice is a manual. It's a mechanical process. It is not the process coming down. Avaroha. The bhakti process is avaroha, coming down to us to uplift us. But the yoga process described in the yoga shastras and also here by Krishna is the upcoming. That means the aroha. Aroha panta, the path of self-endeavoring. Like Srila Prabhupada told, there's the monkey kitten and the cat kitten. Which one is in better position? The monkey kitten, you see, they always have to hang on the mother's back here in Vrindavan. One or two hanging there on the back. Always grabbing there, you know. And the cat taking the kitten, small cat, in his mouth. Never let him drop. So which one is in better position? The cat. Because mother personally take care. The other one can drop down. Sometimes you see the small monkey, right? If the monkey is a little irritated or in dangerous position because they're always in anxiety, then one of the small drops down. Of course, mother always taking him care and bring him up again on the back, you know, and go on as fast as possible to get where is the next banana or whatever to find what they can eat. So the devotee is in better position because the Lord personally taking care and uplifts him. But the yogi is in very difficult position because he makes everything according to his own initiative, with his own practice with the help of intelligence. And this is very enduring, so many tests, so many allurements. And if he is not properly trained by the guru, who is already fixed on the highest point of the transcendence, then the yogi may get in trouble and fall away. But in Narad Muni case, you know, a small boy, you know, he left the home. Krishna took away everything, yasyaham anugrinam iharishitatanam janai, so that he could get shelter and continue on his journey to Krishna. So he went through the villages, through the valleys, mountains, forests, cities, mines. Everywhere he traveled, you know, completely unattached, unaware about anything, only thinking about how to find the proper place where I can sit down and follow the practice given by my spiritual masters, who mercifully teach me the process by their association. So finally came to a very nice forest, which was in the mode of goodness, a very nice place. He considered, this is a suitable place where I can sit down for meditation, because there's no snakes, it's not dirty, it has no thorny bushes there, berries are there, roots are there, pure water is there, a river is nearby, there are no mosquitoes there. So he thought this is the perfect place where I can sit down and meditate. And so he meditated, and he, in a very short time, he, in his meditation, following the practice that he learned from his gurus, he controlled his senses, fixed his mind with help of intelligence on absolute truth, on Krishna, and he got the darshan of Krishna first within his heart. And then later on, he also saw him outside. Darshan. He saw him eye to eye. Krishna appeared. And the boy was overwhelmed by enthusiasm and ecstasy. Ananda was overflowing. So he became completely overflowed by prema of ecstasy to see the Lord eye to eye. But only for a short moment. And the Lord disappeared. And the boy, Narada, he became almost crazy. Oh, now I found the object of my meditation, the Lord of my life. I saw him directly in front of me. Now he's gone. I'm finished now. He felt himself devastated. He became so bewildered that he could also not see him in the heart anymore, not outside anymore. So he was completely lost. Oh no, what should I do now? He cried. Then the Lord, you know, he revealed himself in form of voice, sound, Shabda. Shabda is ultimately the sound representative of the Lord, not different from the Lord. Shabda, it's the ultimate sound representation of Krishna, not different from Krishna. Krishna speaking to him and told him, my dear boy, this form of you, what you have seen now, you know, you are very fortunate, but it's very rarely to be seen, even for the great yogis, for the great masters of mysticism. They rarely get the vision, the sakshat darshan of that form, what you have seen. But because of on your unripe stage of complete meditation in the mode of transcendental goodness, unfortunately you could see this form only for a short time. But don't be sad, my dear boy. You are not lost. You are not lost. Be assured that if you meditate or chant the holy name and mantra about the Lord's name, then you will always feel united with me, you become further purified, and in the end you come to me. So then Narada became pacified, and since that time he was always chanting holy name. And even in next life, he became the son of Brahma. He became Narada Muni, world famous, universal famous, traveling all over the world, always glorifying the holy name of Krishna, his different names of Krishna, Krishna's pastimes, and all other incarnations' pastimes. He is always eager to glorify the Lord's glory in the form of name, in the form of his name, qualities and pastimes. That's Narada's great blessing that he received. Arjuna also had problem. When he returned from Dwaraka, he had to take care of Krishna's wives. But somehow or other, although he was the mighty bow carrier, Gandiva bow carrier, and he defeated so many enemies, but he could not defeat some cowherd boys who came and fighted with him and defeated him and kidnapped all the queens of 16,000 queens, not the major queens, because the major queens went aprakata, lila. That was a pastime of the Lord, of course, how to kidnap the queens, because he wanted to bring them to Vrindavan and ultimately bring them to the spiritual world in this way. It was Krishna who appeared as cowherd boys. And they, of course, could defeat. Only Krishna could defeat Arjuna. But Arjuna, at that point, he could not understand. He felt devastated. He felt devastated because he thought, oh, I'm powerful Arjuna. I have the Gandiva bow. I defeated so many warriors, Maharatis, Atiratis, all kinds of great generals and fighters, Ratas, I defeated single-handedly. But now my, and of course also by the mercy of the Lord, but now my Lord, he left me. Krishna left us. He went back to his eternal abode and he left us alone here. And therefore, although he entrusted his wives to me, the queens, I became defeated by some simple cowherd men or boys. So I feel completely devastated. But then also it gave me a realization that now, a long time ago, my Lord, he teach me the Bhagavad Gita. In due course of time, I have forgotten the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. Even Arjuna, because he was so much in duty and in different actions, that he could not always remember the instruction that Krishna gave in the Bhagavad Gita. But then, due to this incident that Krishna left, and that he became defeated, so he felt powerless. So he understood, my only shelter now is taking shelter in what Krishna teach me in the Bhagavad Gita. In the instruction what Krishna gave in the Bhagavad Gita is my only shelter. This is the ultimate shelter. And that's the ultimate proof. The proof of the Lord's existence. The ultimate proof is not logic. It is not observation, it is not scientific research, or some guessing, you know, is he or not, or finding him out in a scientific way. No, ultimately the Lord, the ultimate proof is Brahma Shabda. It's Shabda Praman, it's the ultimate testimony, the ultimate proof, and because the Lord's words described by himself and also given in the scriptures and repeated by his devotees, by the Mahajans, is an eternal truth. And it's the ultimate truth, the ultimate helping point if a devotee or a person in this world is in trouble. Now, in the West, you know, there's so many help points. You heard about this help point. If you have a car accident, if you have some trouble, you just call a certain number, you know, and then you can get help immediately. In 5 minutes, a car is there to help you solve your trouble and your problems. It's called a help point. It's a kind of a security that the Western provides some societies or where you have to pay for it. So if you have the help point, you know, then they come and help you. But even the help point, they're on the material platform, cannot really help. They're not ultimate. Available soldiers, sainisu asatsu api, tesham pramatanidanam pasyan api na pasyati. Well, because they're themselves struggling with material existence. They can help you temporarily. But the ultimate help point is surrender to Krishna. It's calling out Krishna's name. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam, kalau nastyeva, 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 gatyaranyataha. There is no other alternative, no alternative, no alternative other than chanting Harinam. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. Three times it's repeated to chant the holy name of Krishna. So this is the ultimate shelter for devotee, for a Vaishnava. And therefore, even if a Vaishnava temporarily have some fall down, or swifting away, maybe, Krishna promises in the Bhagavatam, he's never lost. In the Bhagavad Gita, he promises. Narad Muni statement, it is a statement by Narada, the devotee is not lost, Yaktva, this verse. 11th canto, Krishna promises, my devotee, even if he is has a temporary fall down, I personally will take care for him and nullify all the byproduct of his karma. There's actually no karma if a devotee is sincere. So the Nadarjuna, because he was bewildered and Krishna's instruction about the yoga practice, he in the next verse he tells, Almighty, I'm Krishna, text 38. There's not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence, fall away from both spiritual and material success, and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere. So what he speaks here, about what Arjuna is speaking here? Two spheres, two results. What are the two results of a transcendentalist, a yogi? The top, Brahman, to attain mukta, I would say moksha in Brahman. Or if he is very fortunate, Vaikuntha liberation. And what is the, if he fails? Or if his practice is not ripened on the to achieve the supreme goal, and he still has a little attachment for sense gratification, what he will attain? Svargaloka. Heavenly planet. But Arjuna's doubt was now, his question was now, is very, because he's an educated person. He understood. Somehow, if a transcendentalist fails to practice the yoga process as you described it, my dear Krishna, then what is his destiny? Where he will end? Where he will go? He has no shelter. He gave up his responsibility in the material world. What gives him an opportunity to go to Svargaloka? If he performs his duty, he has opportunity to go to Svargaloka, and if he is successful in the, then he can go to Brahma, Brahmaloka. It means Brahman effulgence or spiritual world. And if in case he fails, then he will maybe, or not completely perfect, then he maybe will go to Svarga. But Arjuna, he was he was bewildered. He had a doubt. Later on also, beginning of 7th chapter, text 1, Asam Shayam Samagramam, famous verse. Arjuna had doubt, so he asked the supreme authority, Krishna himself. He didn't ask some of the sages who were present in that time, Srila Vyasadev or some Angira or what other brahmanas were present there. So he was not asking for them, because sometimes they have different opinions. What is the verse? Shutasya Vibina. So the Tarko pratishta shutayasa vibina. Nashaur karmasya tatvam nihitam gohaya mahachana yenakata sapanta. So that statement by Yudhisthira, also from Mahabharata, it states that sages amongst themselves, they have different opinions. What is how to attain perfection, or what to do if somebody failed, what will he attain? So they will have different opinion. But Arjuna had full faith in Krishna as supreme authority, his guru. So he asked him, please tell me, you must know, I have full faith in you. Please tell me, reveal to me, what is the destiny of a transcendentalist who fails to achieve his goal, to control his mind, and therefore becomes bewildered and falls away from the process of yoga. He gives up the yoga process. Will he not be devastated? Will he not be lost like sometimes a cloud becomes dispersed, separated, and then a smaller cloud becomes manifested from a bigger cloud? So if the smaller piece of the cloud is separated from the big chunk of cloud, what represents the transcendence, and it becomes separated as very tiny, what is his future? He has no shelter in the big cloud, and he has no shelter in the sky. And the wind will come, and they will float him in all directions, and disperse him, will destroy the cloud, and in the end will be nothing. Will he not be lost? And he could only ask his question to Krishna, because Krishna is Trikalagya. He knows past, present, and future. He's the Supreme Lord who knows the history of all living entities from all the times, since eternity, since time immemorial, since the creation. He knows everything, and even before creation he knows, because it is a super soul who is within in everyone's heart. Savasya chamridi sanivisto atyaksmitya jnanam apohanam cha. It is the super soul who gives remembrance, who guides us. And how super soul can guide us if we are coming to the material world from previous life, because we have entered the body of Mahavishnu? If you don't go back to home back to Godhead, you are, after the destruction of universe, we enter in the body of the Mahavishnu with all the elements of the material creation, 24 elements. And the Atma also goes in the universe, in the universal form, and in the body of Mahavishnu. And then next time when Mahavishnu is breathing out, the living entities again take birth. And they exactly will take birth in that place where they stopped in the previous karma. So who can remember? The breathing in and breathing out of Mahavishnu, is a long time. Takes billions and trillions and of years. So many yugas. Sahasra yuga pariyantam. 1,000 yuga circles. 4 yugas are 4,320,000 years. Times 1,000 is 1 day of Brahma. And Brahma has 1 year, 60 days, times 4,320,000, then that's only 1 year, then times 100, that's the lifetime of Brahma. And that's how long the universe is existing. And then the same time it will stay in the body of Mahavishnu and comes out again, next breath. And become manifested. And all the jivas who didn't went to attain moksha or liberation, or went to the spiritual world, they take birth again. And it is a super soul who gives them intelligence and knowledge, and puts them in the certain situation where they have, or body, where they continue with their karma. So karma is not ultimately destroyed. It is not ultimately destroyed just by destruction or by death or by entering the body of Mahavishnu. We again have to take birth. It is only destroyed by pure devotional service. Kechi Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. Only by Vasudev Bhakti, pure devotional service to Krishna, without motivation, without interruption, that will pacify the soul, that will enlighten the soul, and will him bring him ultimately to the supreme perfection. And Krishna will explain to Arjuna that the transcendentalist who actually did good in his life, in devotionals, in his particle process of yoga, he will be never lost. So he will be guided from within by the super soul, and he will get a further opportunity in the future to continue his practice of yoga. Either he takes birth in a well-to-do family where he has opportunity to take up the process of yoga or transcendental pious work of devotional service, or he takes birth in a Brahmana family where he learns, becomes trained to do Brahminical activities. Patana, patana, yachana, yachana, dana, dana, and pratigraha. So six occupation of brahmana. So he will become teached again to perform pious transcendental activities or spiritual activities. And ultimately he will, after many, many lives, bahunam chanmanam ante gyanamamam prabhatyante vasate savamiti samahatma sudurlabha. He will attain Vasudev or Krishna ultimately. And if he is very fortunate, he will take birth in Vaishnava family. So therefore Krishna, he pacifies Arjuna, devotee will never be lost. And Krishna promises also in so many places, my devotee is never lost. I personally take care for him and guide him. So of course, for a transcendentalist, because he is taking the step-by-step process of uplifting yoga practice, so he has to go up to the yoga, through the yoga ladder to attain perfection. It's a long work, enduring many lifetimes. But the devotee, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he can become perfect even in one lifetime. And even if he is not attaining complete perfection in one lifetime, because he started the process of bhakti, so he will continue there where he stopped. Therefore Prabhupada told, it is the best bank account saving. If you want to save money, put it on the bhakti bank to engage in devotional service. That's like putting in a safe bank where there's no inflation. It will not become, it will not be gone or become destroyed after some time or devaluated. It always stays. And it waits until your next lifetime you continue again. Or even in this lifetime, continue again. And you stop, you are continuing there where you stopped. And that's also Krishna who gave you a remembrance and guidance from within and arranges from outside so that we always can continue in the process of devotional service until we attain the supreme perfection of prema or completely falling in love with Krishna. Because only on that stage of prema bhakti, all the karma is destroyed. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya told Prema Pumata Mahan, the ultimate goal is Prema, is to attain ecstatic love to Krishna. That's the all above Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. It's Prema, Prema Pumata Mahan. So that's the supreme goal and perfection. In this life or in other lives, if you're on the way, on the path, focusing on that goal, then there's never a loss, because you are on the path. If you are not on the path, then there's another question. Then we have to find out how to get the path of Prema Bhakti. And then if you are on the path, if you're in the beginning or in the somewhere in the middle or almost in the end or in the end, it's there, it's perfect, because you are on the way. That's the main thing, and that will never be stopped. That will go on life after life. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga is a process that will never become destroyed. It will never become forgotten at any time. Because Krishna, the Super Soul, and this conviction we have to have. Like Arjuna, he had this doubt, but this doubt can be removed by the knowledge that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita and in the revealed scriptures of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedas. So I stop here. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Maybe any question? We have a microphone maybe, so they come more near. They can listen to your interesting question.
I actually have a question from your last class, so if I may ask it now.
Yesterday class. Or last Monday.
Last Bhagavatam.
Okay.
You mentioned that the life is spiritual, the prana, oja, and bala are spiritual energies in that last class.
What the prana is?
Is spiritual.
The prana is spiritual.
The life is. Are they or are they not?
No. It's maybe you misunderstood. It's only an example given. The prana, senses cannot exist without prana.
Yes. So are they spiritual?
Listen now. The prana is a subtle air in the body. It's not spiritual. And the prana are responsible to maintain the senses. Because you have eyes, you have ears, you have nose, you have tongue, you have skin. But if the prana is disturbed, these subtle, five subtle airs in your body, or sometimes ten, but five predominant airs are maintaining the body and the senses. And therefore the senses are sometimes known also as prana. But the mistake is, the acharyas, they only give this as an example. The senses are sometimes described as prana. Prana and the senses is one. But if you are more deeply observing it, then they're actually two. The two. Because the senses is an organ, and the prana is a life force. And only as long, only if the life force is present, the senses can function. The organ, sense organ can function. And therefore, in one sense, simultaneously the sense organs, as long they are, nourished by prana, they're one with prana. But they are not prana itself. Because if prana leaves the senses and the body is dead. Understand? Then the body is dead. That means if the life force, the life energy, that means this, in other words, this is actually described in Svetasvatara Upanishad. It's one of the major Upanishads. And Svetasvatara Upanishad describes how the soul is floating in the body. And the soul is situated in one place in the heart, and it becomes carried by the life airs, by the prana. Yeah? As long as the soul is present in the body, prana is here. No. If the body becomes weak and prana becomes also weak, we in the story, as it is described in the story of Puranjana in the fourth canto, you know, Puranjana story, and the snake of the protecting city of Puranjana city, the soul city, with the intelligence, the queen, and his protector, the guard of the city, became weaker and weaker. It's a five-hooded snake, prana, became weaker and weaker, so that ultimately the city of Puranjana became destroyed due to old age and weakness. Prana became weaker and weaker and gradually fades away and leaving the body. And then the old age came, Jara came, time, Kala came, and ultimately Mara came, death came. And then the body become destroyed. The soul has to leave the body. As long as he is attached to the body, the prana with his subtle body together will be carried to the next body. Understand? And if he goes back home by the Godhead, or he attains liberation, then prana and the subtle body and gross body, everything becomes, as Kapila Dev is describing in the third canto, it becomes, digested. From the fire, from the stomach, is digesting all the food. The heavy and subtle food is completely digested by the fire of the stomach. In the same way, you know, the subtle body and the gross body and the prana air and the conception of material existence, the subtle conception of citta, everything is burned to ashes. And then the soul is liberated. But depends then what kind of liberation you aspire. No? That's different direction given by different acharyas, different sampradayas. Some sampradayas teach Brahman is the ultimate moksha. Some say Vaikuntha. Four kinds of liberation is the ultimate moksha. And for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and other Vaishnava sampradayas, ultimately Krishna, to go back to Krishna Loka, become Krishna's devotee and serve him according to the four rasas, main rasas. That is the ultimate moksha or liberation. This is the supreme mukti, supreme liberation. And this is available by mercy of Lord Chaitanya and by six Goswamis and our Guru Parampara coming from them. Understandable? Huh? Microphone.
Thank you, yes, sir. I just wanted to clarify that it's not a spiritual energy.
It's not spiritual.
Thank you.
But it's still, it's good that you also know about this development. So the prana will remain in the material world. It's a subtle, it's in the material element. Coming from the life airs. And the living entity is not the life air. The living entity is Atma. And the life airs only are carrying him and give him a shelter so that he can exist in this material body. Because if a life air, prana, would not be with the soul in the material body, the soul could not exist without the subtle airs. You could not open your mouth. You know that? Without prana, you cannot open your mouth. You cannot see. You cannot hear. So it is the prana what makes this possible and helps the soul in this way to perceive the world, the material world in this way.
Is there any direct relationship between your soul and your... Just don't be bothered, I'm just asking. Please, stop that.
What happened?
Speak.
What is...
Huh?
Keep it more near to your mouth. You should not ask. You should not ask. What do you say, Prabhu?
He's saying that we should hear when he speaks and asks the question. So everybody hears, speak on the microphone.
Yeah, he wants to do it.
And he doesn't want to speak on the microphone.
No, you speak in microphone, otherwise I will not hear you. And then I cannot give you an answer maybe.
Question, because he is the one, when he goes up, he
doesn't ask
him and ask
unnecessary
questions.
Speak in microphone.
Nobody can hear nothing.
Okay, right? Okay. That means problem solved.
So, have you developed...
I can also not use microphone, then probably you will not hear me.
I can manage.
Huh?
He can't hear.
No, you will not hear me. I will speak slower, not so loud. Now I'm speaking a little louder, but I can speak slower. I would say lower. Don't hear me? So why you cannot speak in the mic?
Anyway, I just wanted to ask this question. You mentioned this point, you know, this body gets weakened because the senses which are part of this body, because of the prana they are sustaining. So I just wanted to ask, is there any correlation between your senses getting weakened and because your body, your prana is getting weakened? Because you know, you just mentioned we get old and our senses becomes weak. So just because of this reason only our soul, you know, passed away this body or limited this body?
No, this is a karma, you know, karma will has an influence and the body has to go through six stages. Birth, growing up, staying for some times, dwindling, old age, disease, death. Six stages. So, and everyone has to go through these six stages of bodily change. Therefore, this is an opportunity for the soul to understand that I'm not the enjoyer, that I'm not the doer. We should not be attached. No. Therefore, he is ultimately either forced out of the body or he voluntarily is then ready to go. That's better. And for the whole yoga process or also bhakti yoga is to prepare ourselves to the point that we are voluntarily are ready to go. Because the problem is if you are attached still to something in your material body or in this world, that will be very, very heavy. It's very difficult to let loose of the body because of attachment or of some objects of what you are attached. So therefore in the last stage one should be bold enough to give up everything and become completely detached, and also those around you should let you go, not keep you back. Therefore many times, because relatives are always very attached to somebody and want to not let you go, therefore, the yogi or somebody who wants to give up his body, he goes to a solitary place to give up his body, where there is nobody around who will maybe try to keep him back.
So this soul passed away this body because, you know, it's part of this life phase. I mean, you have to take birth, then you have to grow, then you have to get old, then you have to be diseased, and then you have to die. So it's a part of this life phase circle. Then it has any relation to do with your getting old or getting, you see. I mean, there's no certainty because, you know, person died anyway. whether it's young, old, or you know, young. So there's this nothing to do with your life state. It, anyway, it has to have happened.
It depends on your lifestyle, you know. So you can also die very young, and you can even die with full prana power. Even your body is full of prana, you can die by an accident or by something unforeseen, you know. There are three kinds of miseries, you know. Misery is body, misery from mind, misery from higher sources. So it's not under our control. So therefore we should never think, oh, I'm young, I'm full of prana, therefore I still have enough time. So until my prana becomes weaker and then I can maybe surrender to Krishna. No, you should start now, as long you're more or less have good prana. That was always Prabhupada's point. As long we are young, we should all start, because if you are already very old and weak, it will be very difficult to take up the bhakti yoga or any yoga process. So those who became yogis and went to any yoga practice, they started with very early age, either in childhood already or with Madhvacharya over here. He left family when he was 12 or 14 years old, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya also, Lord Chaitanya 24 years old. Jesus, even in Christianity, or how to say, the founder of the Christianity is with 33, he left. Or something like that. Oh, before actually, even with 33 he left. Buddha. Buddha, he was a prince. He saw the four miseries in life: old age, disease, death, birth. He became enlightened. So he thought, oh, what is that? My father always kept me in the palace. That I could not see the reality of misery of the world, of birth, old age, disease and death. Father always wanted to avoid to keep his son away from the miserable world. He thought, I will keep him in the palace there, and we will take completely care that he will not have to see and perceive these four miseries. But one time by chance, you know, he came out of the palace and he saw in short time all the four miseries. I'll give him the enlightenment and to renounce his kingly life, princely life, and meditate and take up the process of meditation underneath Bodhi in a tree or some saint tree where he was meditating. So we should always be prepared. And shall not wait until the prana is getting weak. Because if the prana is getting weak, it will be very difficult to take up the yoga process. And if somebody, like say a devotee, who is fixed in bhakti, and he gets some diseases, you know, and so do also prana. Prana is not functioning properly. For him is no loss, because Krishna will help him, you know, to further go on to remember Krishna, to speak about Krishna, to absorb in bhakti, maybe even better than before. And ultimately he will completely remember Krishna, never forget him, even though this weakness in his body is there, either in cross or in subtle way. So it's not a disturbance for him, because he is trained, you know, for so many years, and is trained in bhakti. So that is never, this training is never lost. It's never gone. It's not like a karmic job, you know. If you become invalid, you know, you cannot do this job anymore. And then a karma job, karma work, you know, somebody who works in material world, If he becomes handicapped, you know, he's stamped to become invalid, he gets a rent, or he has to learn something else what he can do, you know, and he becomes miserable. But the devotee, he stays in fixed in Krishna. Tateno kampam susamikshamano punchani vatmakritam vipakam. Ritvakva bubir vidadam namaste chiveta mukti pate sadaya bak. So for a devotee who is engaging in a bhakti process, even despite difficulties, he will never give it up. He offers his obeisances to Krishna and with his body, mind and words, always humbly, continues in whatever possible way to serve him and his Guru Maharaj. He will never forget, he will never give it up, you know, or become doubtful, oh, why this happened to me? No, Krishna already told us, he warned us, he informed us through Arjuna, Dukala Yama Shashvatam, this material world is miserable, Dukala Yama Shashvatam, Mrityu Charavyadi, Tosha Darshanam, Anudarshanam. It's a miserable place, where repeated birth and death is taking place. So this information we get already from beginning of lesson of Bhagavad Gita. And therefore Krishna says, you know, we have to perform our spiritual duty for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, so that we ultimately can fully surrender unto Him, latest in the time of death. But this is a training that we have to start as early as possible. Prahlad Maharaj says, Kaumaram Achare Pragyo Dharma Bhagavatamiha. With Kumara age, with 5 years or six, you should take up the process of bhakti or Sanatana Dharma.
I have to understand, once you mentioned this prana tattva, prana gets weakened, means you are talking at the subtle level and gross level.
Prana is subtle, but it affects the gross. It as affects our body, that means all our senses, the whole body is maintained by the prana.
And what happened then once you get meat within 6 minutes or something? What happened once you meet some accident or something and you died instantly, what happened then?
Depends where is your consciousness and what kind of activities you performed. Like Prabhupada, there's some devotees who had accidental death, you know. Even in young age, they went on Sankirtan, crossed over the road, were not looking properly, and truck drove over. So many devotees had accidents, car accidents, Sankirtan van accidents. But they can understand, you know, Krishna takes care for them. Either they go back to Godhead or they get an opportunity where they can continue in devotional service. So in any way, they're never lost. Because that's Krishna's promise here. A devotee or even a transcendentalist who is doing good for him and for others. He's not violent. He's merciful, kind. He's not killing. Because a yogi is not killing animals. He's ahimsa. He avoids any kind of violences and speaking bad about others. He's neutral, he's friendly and equally disposed to all living entities because he sees in everyone the super soul, his worshipable Lord. So how he can hate anyone, how he can be against someone. So how such a person, even in case he deviates for some time out of because of some reason, how he can be destroyed? Never. Because somebody who did something good is never lost. Even what is ever bad is whatever you do bad is never lost. Saved somewhere. You know, in one point you get a reaction again. But of this, because Punyam Papa, It's temporary. It's along the material world and body exists. You know? But in bhakti karma, Krishna karma, there is no papa and punya. It's Shuddha Sattva. Bhakti yoga is on Shuddha Sattva, ultimately. If Bhakti Yoga is on the unripe stage, as described in the third canto by Kapiladev, Bhakti or devotional service can become mixed by the modes of nature. Therefore, it's Tamaguna Bhakta, Rajaguna Bhakta, Sattvaguna Bhakta, Raja Tama Bhakta, Raja Sattva Bhakta, like that. So, mixed according to our consciousness. According to our attachment. For example, a bhakta or a devotee who is worshipping the deity but who is envious on other living entities and violent and speaking bad about others, you know, he's a tamaguna bhakta, although he's worshipping the Lord. So he's not Shuddha bhakta.
One last point I want to understand. How this sanskara, you know, you carry, your soul carry, how it accumulates in somewhere, sanchit karma, prarabdha, and all these things. How it accumulates your soul, how come your soul accumulates all such things? It gets another birth and you be ready to perform according to your sanskara.
Because the soul is very tiny, but the soul is also very powerful. And it's a part and parcel of the Lord. So much unlimited information that can be carried in the consciousness of the soul. No problem. Scientists nowadays, electro scientists, they can make microchips, you know, they can put so much information in it, you know. But to speak of God, you know. He can give so much information in the consciousness of the living entity, but he can carry with him. But anyway, the actual consciousness of the soul is Krishna consciousness. That is the nature. Jivera Svarupoi Krishna Nityadas. So this is stays always. But it becomes covered temporarily. Covered, you know, covered by some dirt. Some wrong conceptions of life due to the contact with material nature, especially with the mind. The mind can absorb so much information, good information, also bad information, and they become accordingly to that. You know, the consciousness becomes developed, and we develop activity in this way, and we go up or down in this way. In this material world, and therefore to become free or become Krishna conscious, we have to purify the mind. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo. The mind has to be purified. Mind is enemy, is also friend in the same time, but also very bad enemy if he is not trained. Indranucha Prabhu, you had some question or comment?
It's late.
Actually, it's not Arctic?
It's 7:58, this is too bad, right?
Always with your long questions.
So a lot of devotees lose patience in the process and we're not willing to do the work to cure our jaundice, you know. We're chanting but chanting attentively 30, 40 years. So what to do about this? How to develop this?
Keep going. Never give up chanting. I think this I told last time, not? Last Monday, last lecture, I mentioned that, not? Never give up chanting, even though you have weaknesses and not so much taste. Never give up chanting, always continue chanting. Narada Bhakti Sutra says, Anavritta Bhajanat. Never stop with your bhajan. Huh? Never stop. Uninterrupted bhajan. Anavritti bhajanat. Never stop. Ever our slogan is just keep going, but better. Always try better to improve your keep going. Because if you always keep going, repeating the same mistake. It's like in school. And you can repeat always the school again and again. If you don't learn the lesson again, you have to go through the same lesson until you learn. And you can go to the next lesson, right? Right? So it's like that. So we anavritta bhajana means just keep going. And even, but we maybe have weakness, no? Maybe we have some attachment still, and we are not so much concentrated, but we should try, we should endeavor to try to improve by seeking out proper association and proper help, you know, that we can improve. If a disciple, a student has a problem in his class, what he's doing? He's seeking help from outside and from somebody who knows to give him extra lessons in mathematics, for example. So maybe he's not so good in math. So then he goes to somebody who is good in math and he learns from him, you know, that he can master math so that he can, go on in the class, get good marks so that he can go on. If you always foolishly go on, you know, then we are stupid. We should not foolishly go on. And we should not always think, oh, then Krishna will help you. Yeah, then Krishna maybe also will give you a heavy lesson and a lot of suffering. And then you maybe will cry and lament and maybe even blame Krishna, why you do this to me, you know, and why that happened and this happened, because they are actually the rascal. Because we don't want to learn the lesson and Krishna wants to help us. But we are foolish, we don't want to accept help. Because always mind tells, no, listen to me, I'm your guru also. Yeah? Because I'm the king, you know, of all your senses, and you need me, because without me, and with my satisfaction, you know, you will never be happy. Tikka? Right? Why you don't come here?
Okay. So, as Narad Muni was having this opportunity to serve the devotees, there was similar way some devotees get an opportunity to serve senior devotees. So, they can get some benefits?
Of course, yeah. If they are attentive like Narada. But even unconsciously, you can get benefit. Lava matra sadhu sangha sarva siddhi hoya. A little part of a second.
They use ayoka word.
Even a fraction of a second association with a pure devotee can make your life perfect. Sarva siddhi hoya. Even unconsciously. There's two kinds how we can get benefit. Jñāta sukriti and ajñāta sukriti. Ajñāta means unconsciously get benefited. And jñāta sukriti means consciously get benefited. So Narada, in one sense he was ajñāta sukriti, but because he was a boy, he was innocent. He became attracted, he became interested, His senses were very sharp, so he put everything, he put his whole attentions in hearing from the from these great souls. He observed them with his eyes. He smelled them. He served them with his physical body, with his hands and with his legs and with whatever facility he had. And he also received the remnants of their Mahamaha, with their permission. Mahamaha you should not take. You should get permission. Because sannyas is in general, they don't leave prasad behind. We speak about sannyasi. Guru leaves sometimes prasad behind. Why? Because he wants to show to his disciples he's not a gluttonian. He's not an overeater. And he always leaves something behind that they also have some prasad. Because if the guru would eat everything what is served to him, his disciples had to fast. So therefore he leaves some remnants behind. You know, this is maha-maha. That's the meaning, the classical meaning of maha-maha-prasad. He consciously leaves this behind. But the sannyasi is described, he should not leave any remnants behind. He should eat everything and then throw it away the plate. You should not leave anything behind. Therefore, only if somebody is has a service attitude to a sannyasi, and they are somehow or other kind to you and affectionate to you, then maybe they give you permission for Mahaprasad, to eat the prasad. Simply eat something of their remnants. Otherwise, they will take care that nobody will touch it. They will throw it away. Out in the nature, nobody can touch what they eat, right?
So taking Mahaprasad of a senior devotees or a pure devotees will benefit us by taking their permissions.
Yeah, it's. Yes, that's right, like that. And if they leave something behind without permission, if they leave it there, you know, then of course you can eat it. Because the sannyasi person has to take care, you know, that this plate is away, that nobody will touch it. So he will not trust to anyone, you know, that he understands that will take. So he will take it and throw it away by himself. Because he's humble, you know, he never thinks, you know, I will want to leave my prasad to somebody. That's not the consciousness of the sannyasi. So therefore he doesn't leave any opportunity, and if he leaves behind, then of course you can take it
with permission.
Even without permission, if he leaves it there, if he's not taking care. And you also, of course, more also you can listen from and do service, menial service to the devotee, then always you get benefit. Aradhanam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasma paratram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. Better than service to Krishna is service to Krishna's devotees. Because that's more dear to Krishna. And that's Shiva saying to Parvati.
Sometimes we take prasad, and prasad is not different from Krishna. So sometimes we throw prasad, that means we are what we are doing. We are when we know this Krishna prasadam is there. So we have to prasad, and if we just throw it, I don't like this one, that's why I throw it.
Anyway, here in Vrindavan, if you throw the prasad, animals will eat. In other places in the West, you know, you throw on so much food, you know, what the people are preparing will become destroyed. They burn it. No? They destroy even good food, but it's not, if it is a long time not sold and it gets a little rotten, it will destroy it. And even they destroy the good food, I heard today, especially in America, to keep the price level, you know, the selling price, market price. So there's a certain amount of food, tons of food, you know, what they destroy in the sea. This is sinful. Here you can give to animals, you know, they're happy. Of course, it's an apparat if you give your remnants to a cow. You should be careful, don't give your remnants what you touch to a cow. Only fresh food you should give to cow. No, not food what you touched. It's an offense to cow, cow apparat. Yeah, because it's cows are very dear to Krishna, so you don't give the cow your remnants. But you throw it out and in a place where the cow is not taking, and then there's so many other animals, dogs, hawks, the monkeys also, because they're very swift, insects, the food will be gone somehow or other. Here in Vrindavan, everything is recycled. Good. Hare Krishna.